And welcome back to the roundtable on WAMC, 14 minutes after 9 o'clock. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's the panel today, and what a panel we have. It is, if you've never heard the show, it is an open discussion of issues in the news and beyond, or something resembling that. Joining us today is our own Alan Chartok. Good morning, sir.
Good morning to you. I'm glad you're back. I know you had a good time out there on the beach with the kiddies.
Oh, up in Maine. Fantastic. No one was eaten by sharks. It was all good. Yeah, communications consultant Teresa Bourgeois is here. Good morning.
Good morning. And where in Maine? I love Maine.
Oh, York Beach. Oh,
that's not Maine.
Oh, no, it's
that's
fabulous.
North Massachusetts.
The weather and the water was great. The last day the water was about 12 degrees. So that was the
that
was the only drawback.
But
the,
that's Maine.
You know, you got a little, your legs hurt. So,
well, also, you have ample protection.
I see. We'll go there right away. Thank you, Alan Chartok. Also joining us today is columnist for the Times Union, Chris Churchill. Good morning, Chris. Nice to have you here.
Thanks. Good morning.
The email address on this program is panel@wamc.org. Panel@wamc.org if you want to weigh in here this morning. Now, remember, keep your letters short and to the point if possible.
Civil.
Civil is good. Don't swear. Don't write in more than once per day. That is supremely annoying, and that's a sure way to get you banned for good. Don't include links. We can't click them on the air, and we don't know where they're going, right?
No, we don't want to anyway.
Exactly. And don't use abbreviations, and please, if you could, proofread your emails before you send. Alan reads them, and, you know, use maybe no more than two syllable words. It helps. Again,
is that in retribution for saying you were
the email is once again panel@wamc.org. You know, we lost a great one yesterday.
We did.
Glenn Campbell died at 81. You know, what can you say?
You know,
5 Grammys, 45 million records sold, 12 gold albums. He was in the movies. He was a genius. He fought Alzheimer's at the end, and they made that movie about him and his last show. So Glenn Campbell, 81.
And a hell of an instrumentalist.
Oh, yeah.
That's how he got his start. You know, he'd be in this group. What do they call it?
The Wrecking Crew.
The Wrecking Crew,
yeah.
Right? And he would sit in, and apparently, even after he became a star, he would go back and play with them unannounced. I mean, you know, because he was so good at his instrument.
And he played on, you know, with Elvis. He played on Viva Las Vegas and played for everybody's records with the Wrecking Crew.
Did you ever confuse him with John Denver?
No.
Never.
All he had to do was open his mouth. No, not at all. Why? The haircut? What did that? What was?
No, I don't know. I think it was part of my, you know, part of my deal. Because I was such a folky, you know? I always saw those guys as sort of, you know,
they all looked alike to you.
Yeah, I thought he was more country than folky. What'd
you say?
He was more country than folky, wasn't he, Glenn?
No, I'm not saying he was folky. I was saying, you know, I mean, the part of growing up being a Pete Seeger acolyte and doing all of that stuff is you really had no time for the June and Moon and Spoon people. And that was wrong of me, by the way, really wrong of me. But I realize that now, but that's the case.
Well, Glenn Campbell was a musical genius.
He was.
And rest
so
in
was
peace.
John Denver.
Just, he was, just too. Saying. Yeah.
According to Chris Churchill and my wife, John Denver was
John
a
Denver. Fact,
musical
I,
genius.
I was quite upset that at the West Virginia rally that they opened with John Denver's, you know, Country Road song.
Oh, yeah.
And imagine, he was such an environmentalist long before it was trendy to do so.
Yeah.
And
who knew we'd be talking about John Denver today?
Well, but, okay, Glenn Campbell, loved him.
Okay.
Try a Little Kindness, his song, so beautiful and so relevant today.
And Wichita Lineman has been going through my head since this news broke. I think that was his greatest thing. And Jimmy Webb was on Morning Edition today and talking about how he wrote that for Glenn Campbell.
He stayed at our house.
Jimmy Webb?
Yep.
Nice.
He stayed at our house. He came over to do something at the Guthrie Center. And we often put people up from the Guthrie Center. And there he was.
Yeah.
Well, rest in peace, Glenn Campbell, and thank you for the musical legacy. Some breaking news. French officials say police have arrested a man on a highway north of Paris in the search for a driver who rammed his car into soldiers. Two officials say it's too early to say for certain that the man was the driver who rammed a car into soldiers in a Paris suburb today. 6 soldiers were injured in the attack. One of the officials said the arrest was violent, and police opened fire on the suspect. If you have missed that news, France's interior minister says that a driver intentionally targeted soldiers in a calculated car attack and that authorities are still searching for the perpetrator, but they may or may not have found him.
But it was violent and is still searching for him?
Well, they were searching for him earlier today. They're, it's still unclear whether this is the person.
Oh, well, okay.
Anybody want to discuss this?
Is one of the new, you know, weapons of war is to use moving vehicles to kill people, and how can you stop that? I mean, these people were there for that purpose, to stop this kind of thing, but how can you stop it? It's tragic. It's tragic.
It's the sixth time that soldiers with this anti-terror operation in France have been targeted. So
right.
Not much you can do. Good news is the soldiers are recovering and going to be okay. Let's take a quick break here, and then we'll talk about, North Korea, which
I assume may have
come up a couple of times while I was in Maine. The email address here is panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back.
Support.
Alan looking perplexed. It's, of course, Gershwin. It's the Roundtable on WAMC. 21 minutes after 9 o'clock. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Why are you looking at me that way?
I always look at you. You're a strange-looking guy, so I always look at you.
President Donald Trump is stressing the United States' nuclear capabilities, saying there will never be a time that we are not the most powerful nation in the world. But he added, hopefully, we will never have to use this power. On Twitter today, Trump said he has pushed to renovate and modernize our nuclear arsenal. He adds, hopefully, we will never have to use this power. But there will never be a time that we are not the most powerful nation in the world. Meanwhile, residents of the tiny Pacific island of Guam say they're afraid of being caught in the middle of the escalating tensions between the U.S. and North Korea after Pyongyang announced it was examining plans for attacking their strategically important U.S. territory. Some people who live on the island say they can no longer shrug off the idea of being a potential target. The American military takes up about 30% of that island. So while I was away and away from the news, things have been percolating in North Korea. Perhaps the panel can get me up to speed here.
Well, just to begin us, for whatever that's worth, it is so clear that Trump has decided to take a piece out of Harry Truman's rhetoric, something that Truman did do, you know, warning the Japanese that they would be met with fire and brimstone, and they were. And Trump is doing that. But John McCain this morning or last night gave Trump severe criticism and said, you know, if you're going to say it, then you have to be prepared to do it. And my fear is that he is prepared to do it. And that, of course, would mean the end. It would be the end of what we know as humanity. In my opinion, it could be, because if things began to fly. Now, we're all assuming it's not going to happen, but it could.
Key difference with the
Japanese
Truman scenario is that we're already at war. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Here, presumably, we're trying to avoid one. You know, it's an entirely different situation.
Do you think if Truman had Twitter, he would have been tweeting about it?
Oh, absolutely.
You think so?
Yeah, Truman would have loved Twitter.
So, Chris, if you were him, what would you do? If you were,
Trump, what would I do?
Yeah, with Trump, what would you do?
I don't know. I would probably not take such a bellicose line. I would probably do what other presidents have done when it comes to North Korea, which is kind of try not to throw gasoline on the fire, try to calm the situation. I know you're dealing with kind of a crazy regime, and I mean Korea, not Trump, although...
Although
it's arguable.
Dot, dot, dot.
Yeah. But, you know, it's obviously a tricky situation for any president to deal with. Obama certainly apparently warned Trump about how tricky it would be and how it would keep him up at night. Right. So, what to do about it, I don't know. But I don't know that the fire and fury language is particularly
well. Strategic
helpful.
Patience clearly didn't work. And George W. Bush's attempts at deals didn't work.
Well, how do you know it didn't work? I mean,
because they're near an ICBM that with capability, or
right,
maybe they have it, of reaching the U.S. mainland.
Okay, Ray, I get it. But what are the choices here? To me, yesterday, when we had a very interesting Vox Pop on this very subject, a lot of people were saying, you know, what you do is you do nothing. Because until somebody does something that is so totally despicable that you have to respond, there's an interesting thinking going on this morning that it's China that is really meant to be the recipient
of the brinksmanship
of Trump's stuff, because you know, and China put out a piece this morning in which they said, you know, it's everybody should play nice, basically. Everybody ought to play nice.
Well, that's why the options are so unappealing. I mean, you can say that maybe a prior administration should have done more to prevent those nuclear weapons from being developed, or maybe even should have attacked North Korea to prevent them from being developed. But that might have meant war with China, right? So, I mean, that's a terrifying proposition.
Teresa Bourgeois, you have been unbelievably silent. What is going on?
She's scared.
I'm terrorized.
Really?
No, sir. I think this is as dangerous as it gets. And I've been reading, you know, a whole range of folks, Senator McCain, Senator Graham, others have.
Schumer.
Senator Schumer.
Senator Franken.
Many things. Perry, defense. He was a Secretary of Defense and held many, many positions. And he spoke out last night trying to encourage the president to lower his rhetoric. And I think that because there are so few options, that previous presidents have been very careful about their rhetoric. And I think that clearly what President Trump said yesterday was very... The North Korea, they've been trying to provoke him, and it's working, and that's a dangerous combination.
People who are unnerved by what he said yesterday are not going to feel any better when they wake up in the morning and see that he's tweeting about our nuclear arsenal and how strong and powerful it is. You know, I just don't get the timing of that.
Well, the other thing is that his tweet, as Ray said, is that my first order as president was to renovate, modernize our nuclear arsenal. But in fact, as a number of people now have noted in Twitter in response, that it was President Obama who launched the $1 trillion modernization of the nuclear arsenal, not President Trump. So he's tweeting things that are provocative and not true. Mm-hmm. I think that he needs to go back to Washington in the Situation Room. He needs to hire some diplomats. That's the other problem here. The State Department is totally understaffed. You've got Secretary Tillerson saying something different than President Trump is saying. You know, Secretary Tillerson is over there, and I guess he's in Guam today, or headed to Guam today. But he's telling them, you know, you're not our enemy. We need to work this through. And then you have President Trump saying what he said yesterday.
But you make a very good point about the golf course. I mean, here's the guy on the golf course. This may be as close to nuclear terror as we have ever seen, and you stay at the golf course?
Can you imagine?
Hey, it's our last hour. You might as well get a few rounds in.
In all seriousness, can you imagine?
Just ask the people at Pompeii, wherever it was, yeah.
Can you imagine the Cuban Missile Crisis being discussed at a public resort? Well, I mean, at minimum, go to Camp David. And I know that the White House is under renovation right now for a few more days, but Blair House is right across the street. They all need to get in a room, and then perhaps things like who wrote that language yesterday for Donald Trump?
Well, that's when you said go back to Washington. That's an interesting point, because a lot of people think that when he gets away from the White House and gets into these areas where he has less staff around him to kind of calm him or to kind of control the language, that's where sometimes things get a little bit more
loose.
Right.
And the language gets loose. And now this is, when you're talking about these kinds of threats, it's not a time for loose language. And as several people noted last night, you know, Hillary Clinton warned us about this. This is exactly what she warned us about, said over and over again, that a man you can provoke with a tweet should not have nuclear codes. And
Not a Twitter account.
Right, or not a Twitter account. This is just, but I think, you know, William Perry, he says, nuclear deterrence is only effective if threats are deemed credible. Bluster hurts our national security posture.
We'll have to take a break here in a moment. But, Alan, I know you did a Vox Pop yesterday, and I apologize, but I missed it. But I want to ask you for a debrief on a couple of topics about that.
Okay.
We have 15 seconds if you want to read a letter. Otherwise, we'll get to letters after the baby.
Letter from Mike. I find it ironic that Donald Trump accepts and believes the intelligence community when it comes to North Korea. But, in capital letters, he refused to accept the intelligence community's assessment of Russian involvement in our electoral process. P.S., in looking back over the 200 days of the Trump presidency, I think we have figured out the art of the deal. Bullying and intimidation, that's certainly part of the art of the deal. But I don't know that he does listen to his intelligence community when it comes to North Korea. I think the generals are probably aghast right now.
Huh.
Oh, I, you know, you just, why are people like William Perry speaking out?
You people are on a roll, and I don't want to stop you. Alan, you blew through the break. So I'll just remind our listeners that it's panel. Why are you looking at me that way?
No, you're holding me responsible.
I gave you 15 seconds. All right, now we'll take a break for the Brit News. We'll be back. Philadelphia Orchestra playing Gershwin at SPAC tomorrow night, and you can find out more at SPAC.org. The email address here on our program is panel@wamc.org. It is the roundtable panel. And on the panel today, Chris Churchill of the Times Union and communications consultant Teresa Bourgeois and our own Alan Shartok. By the way, we've had a few emails. We mentioned that Glenn Campbell passed away yesterday, and Barbara Cook also died, legendary Broadway star. At age 89, and there were emails about that. And we just want to remind our listeners that we will be airing an archival interview with her at about 11:30 this morning on this program. So stand by.
That's great.
For great memories. Yeah. You did, Alan, a Vox Pop with who yesterday?
Well, you have to guess. Who do you think it was?
It was about North Korea.
He was a professor. He's at Sage. Now you have to guess. Mm. And he has a Greek fisherman's hat.
Ah, Stephen Lebo, Professor Stephen Lebo.
Right.
It seems to me, in looking at this from afar, that China could end this situation today. Just snap a finger and they end this situation. What did Stephen Lebo say about that?
I don't know what he said about it. But I do know that there are a lot of people who believe that North Korea is not as responsible to China as many people think they are. And that the Chinese are in a difficult spot with them, and that is why Chinese voted with the United States on the sanctions bill in the United Nations, because they wanted to signal that they might not have the same kind of ability to stifle the North Koreans as a lot of people are assuming, like Trump is assuming that they have.
Well, isn't the issue, again, I'm nowhere near an expert on this, but isn't the issue with China that they could, that if they could impose more harsh sanctions, but that would hurt the North Korean people a great deal, and they have the delicate balance of not wanting to further destabilize the country.
Well, this,
Korea.
I think, Teresa, has gone beyond, destabilization.
Yeah, no. I think this is a serious.
If the big one falls on North Korea, there is going to be a lot of stuff that floats over and hits the Chinese. They can't afford this. Plus, the Chinese are heavily invested in the United States. The Chinese great trading partner is the United States. We all know that, including, I believe, some Trump products. I don't see how the Chinese in any way benefit if this thing goes forward.
No,
well,
but
does anybody? I mean, the whole world doesn't benefit.
Well, for 65 years, North Korea has been that buffer zone between U.S. interests and China.
Right.
So it has been in their interest to keep China propped up. One would assume that interest
has... China's interest to keep North Korea propped up.
Correct. Yeah. And so one would assume that interest has not fully gone away.
I think it's a question of balance, and I think that things are out of balance right now. You've got this guy, he is a madman, although many people think he isn't, resisting regime change in North Korea and doing anything in his power to threaten everybody around him. And that it really has gotten to the point where there's some people with their fingers on the trigger. Does anybody in this room really think that Trump, under no circumstances, won't find some reason... that's inartfully put, but some reason for doing a preemptive strike on North Korea?
A nuclear strike on North Korea?
Well, I think it certainly is possible. I think it's possible. I don't think it's probable, but I think it's possible.
That would be insane. I mean, I just
got through telling you it's insane.
This is why I think they need to go back to Washington and get amongst the key leaders. And, you know, you have Senator Schumer saying we need to be firm and deliberate with North Korea, but reckless rhetoric is not a strategy to keep America safe. He's calling the president, his words, reckless, which
yes,
they
but
were.
But let's remember, the president is the only one who has the authority, ability, and, you know, to do this. Now, we see a guy who is reckless. You quoted Hillary Clinton saying earlier, keep his finger off the button when she was running against him. I do think that we have a guy here who gets convinced by his own bluster. I've often said you put anything he says on a lie detector and you get a flat line, meaning he believes it.
Right.
And that's so terrifying.
But, Alan, you're correct. China and Russia have a lot of self-interest here to lower the temperature. But they can't do that with Donald Trump using the blustering language that he's using. He needs to step back and let them do what they have the capacity to do to lower this temperature.
So here's Trump. He's at 33% in the Quinnipiac poll, 38% in the other polls. He's desperately trying for a Hail Mary pass that'll get him back on the books. And he may be convinced that this is the way to do it.
So wag the dog.
Well, yeah. And then what happens is that dog sometimes turns around and bites.
This is just too dangerous. This is as dangerous as it gets.
But you said you were scared. Why are you so scared?
Because I think it's, I spent 2 years traveling around the country facilitating discussions on the global spread of nuclear weapons. This was a long time ago. We had a role play game. It's called Wildfire. So people went through a role play simulation about what can happen. There are always experts in the room. I was just facilitating. And this is that scenario. You know, things can get out of control very quickly, and you need what they call fire breaks. And you have.
So you agree with me?
I think it's I think this is as dangerous as it gets. You have a State Department that is not staffed. Key positions are not staffed. You have a president who's at a vacation spot,
and is probably not listening to his generals.
But we don't know that.
No.
I mean, you can say those generals have been through quite a bit and maybe have a more clear-eyed view of the geopolitics involved.
GOP politics.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and I think all along one of the things that's really concerned me about Donald Trump is that he certainly understands power, but it's not clear to me in some ways that he understands the power of words. You know, he understands the marketing value of words, but does he yet understand, as President of the United States, the power of his words and the influence of those words? And in some cases, you know, it's unfortunate, but in this case, I think it's dangerous. Chris, you're looking at me like
it's a frightening conversation. I don't know. I mean, yeah, the power of words when you're negotiating a deal for, you know, an office building or something, it's not quite the same as when you're negotiating with other world superpowers, you know, and threatening another country with nuclear destruction is kind of bombastic, to say the least.
You know, I wrote to somebody yesterday. They asked me what I thought about his remarks yesterday, and I wrote that he seems like a person drunk with power but not armed with the knowledge of the world or an understanding of the power of his words. Mm-hmm. And that makes it all the more dangerous.
So speaking to the group, including Raymond, does anybody in this room think that it is outside the margins of possibility that Trump will pull a preemptive strike?
A preemptive strike, but a preemptive nuclear strike is a whole nother ball game. I don't think it's within what he may think he has no other option, and apparently it's one of the things that's on the table.
I mean, one thing that I see in the news this morning, and really haven't been watching much in the last 10 days, but I see in the news a lot that there's not a lot of mention of the fact that Kim Jong-un has basically threatened nuclear attacks on the United
States.
Well,
that's what the president was saying. Don't threaten us. By threatening us, you have... Don't do it again, he said.
Do it again, and then what did they do? He said, well, we're going to attack Guam. Their response. We're going to attack Guam.
Yeah.
So now, that's why you don't use as former Secretary of Defense says. That's why you don't use that bombastic language.
Right, well, you can't draw lines in the sand that you're not prepared
to. As we learned with Syria, you don't make a red line.
You don't make a red line like that. It's too dangerous. Go somewhere?
Well, I thought we could take a break, and then we have a whole stack of letters.
Okay, whatever you say, boss.
Thank you, Alan Shartok and Teresa Bourgeois and Chris Churchill. The email address here is panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. We'll take a break, and then we'll get to the letters.
Support for WAMC comes from the CNS companies, providing comprehensive planning and engineering design to public and private clients nationwide. CSCOS.com for details. Manchester Designer Outlets, a scenic walking village in historic Manchester, Vermont, featuring over 40 designer outlets and more. ManchesterDesignerOutlets.com for details. Carrie Haddad Gallery, Hudson. New abstract paintings by Woodstock artist Jenny Nelson and wooden wall sculpture by Stephen Walling today through September 24th. Artist reception Saturday, 5 to 7, CarrieHaddadGallery.com. Foresight Land Services. For over 45 years, offering civil engineering, land surveying, planning, and environmental permitting to private and municipal clients in the Berkshires and Eastern New York. ForesightLand.com. And Shakespeare & Company, Lenox, Massachusetts, presenting two Edith Wharton comedies, Roman Fever and The Fullness of Life, August 17th through September 10th, shakespeare.org.
It's the roundtable panel. The discussion continues during the break. You know you're on a roll. It's 9:45 exactly here on a Wednesday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Our email address is panel@wamc.org. And I know we have letters to read. Alan, you wanted to make a point before
I
so rudely interrupted you with doing radio business.
Oh, you sure did.
Yeah.
So Chris Churchill just said to me, I had said, what if Trump does a preemptive attack? And Chris says, yeah, not a nuclear attack, but a preemptive attack. Okay, then they respond, and you said cyber. You said, Teresa, you said...
The hope here is that we have the cyber capacity to address this with cyber, because I think once you start the military steps, then... It's just a too volatile a situation. It's a wildfire. There aren't enough fire breaks in place. Once you start, because of who you're dealing with in North Korea, you can't start. And that's why I think one of the things you do see this morning is a number of senators, Republican and Democrats, and others, former officials in the government, really pushing back hard on Donald Trump. And I think that's why, there aren't any good options for him here. That's been the problem in North Korea for a long time. There are not good options.
Good morning from Sheffield. My question is, what are the citizens of North Korea being told, seeing as how their news and media communication is kept under Kim's control?
That the U.S. is threatening to annihilate them.
Patricia says, I'm a member and contributor to WAMC and deeply appreciate your offerings. The amount of advertising called underwriting has found me tuning you off and listening to NPR station other areas all too often. Please reflect on current underwriting policy. Patricia, I have to say I love our underwriters, love them, and it is a half of basically what we get is coming from them, and you couldn't have WAMC. So you have to do what you have to do, but I don't like to be threatened. Thank you. Let's see now.
And I got to use one of the spec tickets the other night from my donation, and it was so lovely.
Oh, yeah, what'd you see?
Oh, it was the Philadelphia Orchestra, and there were aerial acrobats and such.
No kidding.
Oh, yes.
Did you imagine that, or did it really happen?
No, I have... I can't see on the radio. I have pictures.
It was
just magnificent. It was, I don't know if anyone listening went there too, but it was just, the music was beautiful, the aerial acrobatics, the weather.
Yeah.
Well, they had said that there was going to be flooding. And so
that's not a good sign.
But it didn't. It did. It looked bad all around us. But right where we were, it was magnificent.
Oh,
so thank you to that.
Well,
they officially?
Did you ever ask my question about the date?
It was fantastic.
All right.
Okay.
Sure talk.
All right. John from Hebron.
Hi, John.
Says, if Trump leads us to war with North Korea, resulting in the use of nuclear weapons, isn't that a perfect path for the declaration of martial law? Ultimately, this could lead to the erosion of democracy, creating dictatorship. What do you think?
I think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves.
I mean, we'll have much bigger problems than that.
Yeah, let's just, yeah. You're right, right. Yeah.
Well, I think it's a good question, because sometimes you have to think, if they do this, we do this, and what's the ultimate gain and what's the ultimate objective?
What would the ultimate gain, what possible advantage would President Trump have for declaring martial law without a valid reason to do so?
Well, that's the issue, the valid reason. You know, there are those people who think that that's been the game all along. That, you know, the elections were phony elections. They were rigged elections. The next ones are going to come up are rigged elections. This according to him. And at some point he says you can't have elections because they're all rigged and they're rigged against me. I'm afraid that's what he's got with the 33% that he's looking at right now.
Well, this is right now so far beyond politics. What we need to do is lower the temperature here in the U.S. and around the world. I mean, that's the real issue here. We need the senior states people to come in and work with him to lower the temperature and calm this situation down in the next few days, because it's very precarious.
Greg says, given the paranoia that reigns there, I think it's vital to let North Korea know that we will never attack them first. Okay, but that's exactly what he's not doing. He's doing exactly the opposite.
The other thing, too, I mean, we have to kind of remember that North Korea is not on an island by itself. It's there with South Korea, which is an ally of ours. And when you threaten nuclear destruction on North Korea, that terrifies people in South Korea just as much. And, you know, that's another reason why a preemptive nuclear strike makes no sense whatsoever. I mean, not to anybody, I would hope.
And, you know, how many soldiers do we have? If you examine
Trump's words yesterday, they were quite powerful.
They were.
Rain of fire like the world has never seen before. Come on, what do you think he was talking about?
Well, he was definitely that's a nuclear threat. He's using the threat of nuclear weapons, and that's why I'm highly uncomfortable with it.
I think a lot of people are. I asked the panel, who do you think is more likely to launch a nuke preemptively, Kim Jong-un or the President of the United States?
Okay, so do we have to pick one?
Yes. Yes, you do, sir.
Well, I think both of these guys are off the rails, to be honest with you. I think the threatening of nuclear retaliation by Trump is right up there, and I think, obviously,
The threats Korea are making nothing new at all. They're nothing. They've been doing this for a long, long time.
Correct, which is why most presidents don't react to it the way that Trump reacted to it.
Except
the Twitter feed is probably a tactical mistake.
Except that the Washington Post has now said that they have the capacity to launch and to launch it to the United States, and they can with a nuclear weapon.
Is that not a threat? It's a huge threat.
Well, of course it's a threat.
So what do you do? What does Shartok, President Shartok, do?
President Shartok says, I'm glad I'm not president. but I do think
President Shartok says, you take it, Mike.
We have going to the golf course. We have 24,000 U.S. troops in South Korea.
Yeah? Your point is?
A lot of Americans there.
Right. That's another reason why a nuclear strike doesn't make any sense.
We have 24,000 U.S. troops there. We have 54,000 military people in the region. 54,000 military people in the region.
Good morning, panel. President Trump has changed the American presidency. The markets did not even blink at this dangerous nuclear statements, and the U.S. dollar sold off. This means the dollar as a safe haven is no more. This signifies Trump has trashed our standing in world politics. That markets don't sell off after such a dangerous statement means that financial markets don't believe a word, he says.
Well, actually, the market dropped
0.2% the futures were down this morning.
Overnight, the futures are down. The Asian market's down.
Markets are open now, so I haven't seen what they're doing yet.
But before we went on, Marketplace had a story on this, that the markets and that the, not the misery index, what do they call the fear index?
The misery index is what we use on this program.
No, the misery index is something different. But the fear index, what's it called? Oh, I'm sorry, I'm terrible on the markets, but that it jumped 12% overnight.
So let's talk about the fact that it's Mary Poppins' author's birthday. You walked in here, Teresa.
I know.
You said, "I'm worried. I can't sleep. I can't eat."
She's been buying spam.
There's a construction crew at her house right now building a bunker.
I filled up my bag of Twizzlers last night.
Everybody, just take a deep breath.
I filled up my bathtub with water.
I've got 300 pairs of underwear in the basement.
That was right.
So stop giving me a hard time.
No, but you do. Everyone should have an emergency plan anyway. Hurricanes, you know, if you live in hurricanes, tornadoes, anyway.
North Korea nuclear attack, hurricanes.
But now's
tornadoes.
A good time to
tuna fish.
Go to the American Red Cross site and understand what your emergency plan. It was interesting, though, as I was saying, when I was reading the New York Times story, there were two ads in the middle of the story. One was for American Red Cross disaster preparedness, and the other one was for a stop bullying ad. And right in the middle of the New York Times story on North Korea. So.
Russell says,
"Hello, Russell.
Russell, come on, folks. Trump doesn't understand, in quotes, anything. He's learned over his lifetime to be mean, tough, demanding, controlling, and to never, ever lose." Dwight says, but he has lost, you know, as he's gone into many bankruptcies. You know, that's been a loss, hasn't it?
Taj Mahal, gone.
Partially a loss. I mean, partially it's a strategy, I think, when you're that big.
Leaving somebody else holding your debt? Is that what you're talking about?
That's business, baby.
He lost the lawsuit on the Trump University.
Wait a second. Ray just answered me by saying, that's business, baby. That is not business, baby. That is not good.
How do you think you become a billionaire? You leave someone else holding the bag.
That's how some people do business, and we know that's how he does business.
Dwight says, can the president launch a nuclear strike against the advice of the military staff, et cetera, as a loner? The answer to that is yes, he can. I've asked many people about that in the position to know, and he's the one guy.
I know Malcolm Nance, remember, he was very clear on
that
when
he was.
You guys were discussing that. I heard that show, and he was good.
Was he on last week? We'd love to
have
heard.
This was a couple weeks ago. Okay. Yeah, I would love to hear him on this.
But it just shouldn't be that way, right? I mean, that just seems unbelievably dangerous to have
Shmudn't.
Well, I know that. But not even, I mean, any president, not just Trump, could have a nervous breakdown or could have some sort of problem, emotional distress.
Woodrow Wilson?
You don't want...
Right.
Yeah, you put Mrs. one Wilson person in charge of the fate of the world is insanity.
We didn't have it then, but Mrs. Wilson would have had her finger on the button.
Correct. And she was tough.
But you're right. This should be changed, and I'm sure if we get through this, it may be
when
changed.
We get through this, Alan, let's be positive. We have a lot of...
There you go again.
Well, there they go again.
Okay.
When we get through this.
Peter says, how condescending. Peter says, Trump's decisions seem to be motivated by nothing more than what boosts his ego. I'm convinced that in his mind, nuclear devastation would be better than coming off as a wimp.
I'm not willing to go that far.
No.
Yeah. I mean, this is a man with children and grandchildren and everything.
Well, children and grandchildren, you think he's shown any regard for them in health care and everything else that he's done? Cutting education funds and everything like that?
First of all, his grandchildren don't have to worry about those things. But secondly,
exactly.
That's a very different area than, you know, nuclear destruction.
Right.
Don't you think?
You're so reasonable. Stephen says... Please explain why there are no good options given that we have 60-plus years of peace under the current option. Why can't we view the current situation as success? Doesn't Mr. Trump sound as unstable as Kim? Well, there are people who do. I mean, many of the senior politicians in the United States have said so, that he is unstable in this situation.
And also, well, the current situation has changed, or the situation that writer is referring to has changed because North Korea now seems to have the nuclear capacity that they didn't
exactly.
have
exactly
2-3 months ago.
And Kathleen says, just tuned in. Has anyone mentioned Trump's peculiar defensive body posture during his threat speech? He looked like a scared rabbit.
I did notice that. It was the arms crossed across.
Oh, really?
So? That's a bad thing?
Bill Belichick does that.
Yeah, but...
I thought exactly the opposite. I thought his bellicosity and his bulliness was coming through.
Yeah, it was a weird posture, though, for those kind of remarks. Usually when a president makes those kind of remarks, he's at a podium. He's not just sitting at a table right in the first place.
And clearly somebody had... This is what I want to know, the backstory. Who gave it? Is this Stephen Miller? Who gave him those words? Because...
The fire and the fury?
They were
repeated 2 times, so right. It was clearly a
clearly it was a Harry Truman quote.
Yeah, it was a Harry Truman quote, and clearly those were his talking points. But I thought Kellyanne Conway, look at her face after he said that. She looked a little unsettled.
Did a Danny Thomas spit take, did she?
Oh, good.
You know how I feel about her. Andy said, President Trump has changed the American presidency. The markets did not even blink at his dangerous nuclear state.
Okay, yeah, we read that one.
We did that?
Yeah, that's right, sir. That's all right.
Well, why is it back in
it's
here?
It's a simple mistake. Hey, let's take a break.
You did that to make me look bad.
There's a...
Okay, if we could just take a pause. I got to tell you, the vibes are very, very, very bad and nervous here in the studio.
It is very dark, grim.
Yeah, we got to cheer up because, you know.
It's time to, let's have a shot. Okay, let's do the news and we'll hit the bourbon. It's the roundtable and the email address is panel@wamc.org. We'll break for news. We'll be right back. Stop talking. We're on the air. It's the roundtable panel. 10:06 is the time. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Herding cats again. It's the panel. It's Alan Shartok, Teresa Bourgeois, and Chris Churchill. The email address is panel@wamc.org.
And don't forget, Ray, tomorrow is WAMC night at SPAC.
You're kidding.
No. Why
would I kid the Philadelphia
with you?
Orchestra?
Hence the Gershwin.
Playing Gershwin.
Yeah.
And actually, that was not the Philadelphia Orchestra, but Gershwin on guitar, Jack Jezero.
My own Colleen O'Connell will be leading the delegation.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, she's a people person.
Oh, she is.
She's very nice. Stop up and say hi to Colleen.
Yeah.
So anyway. Oh, gosh.
Hi, Colleen.
18 minutes to go. Let's read some email. Panel@wamc.org.
All right. Hi, panel.
Hello.
Who were the geniuses that came up with a law that allows one person, the president, to launch nuclear weapons?
That's what I said.
Yeah, you did say that, Chris. No one can stop him? Two question marks. Someone needs to deem Trump unfit for office and quick. Have a great day. Have a great day.
Wasn't there some talk?
The world is almost over. Have a great day.
Wasn't there some talk a couple of weeks ago of just that, of Congress saying, well, let's put some more safeguards in as far as the nuclear option goes?
I'd be surprised if there weren't.
What?
You
there
saw.
Might be a proposal. I mean, they obviously passed the proposal having to do with the sanctions against Russia, but somebody, I'll check that. Somebody may have introduced legislation around that issue. I'll check.
All right,
you check.
Okay.
Good morning, panel.
Good morning.
In the middle of a conference on the opioid epidemic where Trump can't offer anything better than opioids are bad and people shouldn't try them, Trump lashes out at Kim Jong-un with a threat of nuclear holocaust. Is this rational behavior? That's from our friend Jules, who always makes good
comments.
I think
it's undisciplined political behavior.
Yes, but words have consequences, Raymond.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So if you say something like that and you're the president of the most powerful nation in the world, which has this nuclear arsenal, you really have to watch what you say.
You make a point.
Thanks.
So Senator Ed Markey introduced legislation to limit President Donald Trump's ability to launch a nuclear strike.
Let's get that passed quickly.
All right, Churchill, simmer down.
Barbara says.
Tomorrow's column. Pass that darn bill.
Barbara says, good morning, panel.
Good morning.
Come on, Chris.
Good morning, panel.
Isn't it frightening that we speak of the need to control, in quotes, our president so he hasn't to run off the rails and that the controllers are the military? There's much happening in our country that goes beyond being merely distasteful and veers towards the dangerous in both thought and deed. And that's from Barbara, to which I say, do you think?
And I will say again, Hillary Clinton understood the world and she understood the dangers and she said it over and over.
Susan says, Truman spoke after the bombing of Hiroshima
before the
bombing of Nagasaki. Very, very similar to what Trump said. Very, very scary, says Susan. Thank you. And Daniel says, this quote from Carl Sandburg captures Mr. Trump effectively. If the facts are against you, argue the law. If the law is against you, argue the facts. If the law and the facts are against you, pound the table and yell like hell. That's from Dan in Fishkill. I like it. I've heard it before.
It's pretty much the mantra of this program.
He did say, he also said, Carl Sandburg also said, that the Weavers, Pete and all those guys, that, you know, they were America singing. I thought I mentioned that. Robert says, President Trump's alarming the escalating threats of North Korea yesterday are similar to Vice President Dick Cheney's dangerously provocative speech in 2007, saber-rattling at Iran from the deck of a U.S. aircraft carrier 150 miles off Iran's coast. Mr. Cheney was, it seems, quickly muzzled and sidelined after this by the Bush White House, presumably because of his irresponsible speech and the escalation it could have fueled. The question is, what checks and balances can, quote, we the people seek to exercise to counteract a president whose speech could lead us into a greater escalation and danger? And that's from Robert in Pelham, 123 Massachusetts.
Okay.
Right. In fact, there was a New York Times article that talked about how this there was little precedent for what Trump said yesterday, and they noted the Cheney's speech in that.
Good morning, panel, says our friend Bob in Milford.
Good morning.
Hi, Bob. Hey. Hi, Bob.
Trump's rhetoric sounds Trump's rhetoric sounds more like Kim Jong-un's than that of Truman's. Like crazies think alike. And that's our friend Bob in Milford. And John says, hi, panel.
Hello.
Hello.
In speaking and engaging with various Trump supporters around the country, parentheses, I travel extensively for my work, I'm worried that a military intervention with North Korea, see what he said? No matter what you say, they go and do it.
Just, I'm sorry?
Well, they said intervention with N dot K dot.
North Korea.
You said no abbreviations.
Oh, but you figured it out.
But you figured it out.
You should have gone with the flow.
All right.
You got one.
That a military intervention with N dot K by the orders of Trump will garner him great praise and will serve to bolster him in the eyes and hearts of the sadly misguided and duped Trumpers. In spite of his obvious incompetence as commander-in-chief and prez of the USA, worried John in Phoenicia.
I would be interested if anyone listening does think his words yesterday were a good idea, you know, what their thoughts are.
I guarantee you there are.
Yeah, oh, no, and I'm wondering if any of our listeners, I'd be interested to hear from them.
I assume they tuned out right at the beginning of the program, so you may not hear any emails from those.
Slim Pickens is still riding that bomb.
It's the panel, and it is panel at WAMC.org if you want to send us a brief email. 11 minutes coming up now, 12 minutes after 10 o'clock. President Trump attended a briefing on the country's opioid drug epidemic yesterday. The session was held at the president's private golf course in central New Jersey, where he is on a 17-day working vacation. Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price, Senior Counselor Kellyanne Conway, Senior Advisor Jared Kushner, and First Lady Melania Trump were among the attendees. Trump's Drug Commission recently called on him to declare a national emergency to deal with the opioid crisis. An initial report from the commission said that approximately 142 deaths each day from drug overdoses mean the death toll is equal to September 11th every 3 weeks. No declaration of a national emergency. New Hampshire has become the latest in a string of state, county, and local governments to file lawsuits that accuse prescription opioid manufacturers of fraud and deceptive marketing. New Hampshire's Attorney General's office suing Purdue Pharma, alleging that the drug manufacturer has continued its deceptive marketing of OxyContin in a state that has been called the ground zero of the opioid epidemic. Teresa Bourgeois, you first.
Well, I'm going to paraphrase Joe Biden here, former Vice President and Senator Joe Biden, who regularly said, don't listen to his words, read his budget. It's not what he says, it's what his budget says. It matters. And while it was nice that he spoke out and gave some attention to this, he promised all during the campaign. After Hillary Clinton brought this up, he then said that he would respond. But if you look at his budget, well, first of all, look at all the range of Trump care proposals, the health care proposals that he was advocating be passed. Those would millions of people would lose their health care and lack and access to treatment because of the Medicaid and other cuts. But also, his budget calls for a reduction in funding for addiction, treatment, research, and prevention services.
It's unbelievable.
That's the problem.
And that's why we love having you on the show.
That's the problem. So, yes, it was a nice press event, but as Joe Biden says, you know, what's in your budget? That's what matters.
Well, I don't disagree with any of that, but I also think, you know, part of the problem is you're talking about treatment and things after the fact. Almost nobody seems to know what to do before the fact, right? They're very, I have never heard a politician say anything that I thought was like, okay, that would work. I mean, the cause of this epidemic is so deep and complicated that I don't think any policy can fix it, to be honest with you.
The parts of it that aren't complicated, though, as I understand it, again, not an expert in this, but pharmaceutical companies over the last decade or more have been really pushing pain management. You know, that's been a big focus on pain management. And so you need to work with the pharmaceuticals companies and the doctors to reduce the number of opioids that are prescribed. Over and over again, when you hear personal stories of people, often they say, you know, my kid was an athlete and he broke his arm and they gave him pain medication and, you know, and that started this tumble or what, a car accident, whatever it is. But not all the time, but very often these are related. They began with being prescribed
some of the pain time medication. Some of the time that's how it starts, and there are probably too many opioids floating around out there loose on the streets, but a lot of it is heroin too that is, you know, just a little bit divorced from that whole issue. It's I think there's kind of there's a despair out there that I don't think any policy is really going to address.
Well, that's true.
Well, I saw a number yesterday in the paper. I'm probably not remembering this correctly, but I thought it was like 174 deaths a day.
Yeah. A day.
I mean, think about that.
You can look at the obituary, in this area at least, you can look at the obituary page almost every day, it feels like, and see some young face looking at you that, you know, is probably a drug overdose.
And the number of relatives, grandparents that are raising children because their parents are addicted, I mean, it's a devastating situation. And, you know, heroin is cyclical, we're in that heroin cycle now. But we're also, you know, there's a big prescription drug problem in this country.
The email address here is panel@wamc.org. It is the roundtable panel here for a little bit longer on the program. And, Alan, you have some email.
I do. Thank you, Raymond. Daisy says, Washington Post just reported a pre-dawn raid of Manafort's house. Getting very interesting. Great panel, Daisy.
I did not see that one. And Teresa Bourgeois has a computer. I usually don't bring a computer in. Just bring paper because I'm very old school when I host the program.
You think you're old school?
Well, not... Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
But
FBI
Teresa is looking it up.
Pre-dawn raid.
Okay. And what is your source, madam?
The Washington Post.
Okay.
WAPO.
17 minutes ago.
Wow. And
FBI
we're there.
Conducted pre-dawn raid of former Trump campaign chairman Manafort's home.
Very interesting.
And we were there. I've said all along I thought he was going to be the scapegoat in all of this, but who knows? Chris says, what if Trump knows he's screwed with the Russia investigation, (parenthesis impeachment), and he says, to hell with it, might as well go out with a bang? No comment.
Let me just, the raid actually happened last month, but it was just reported. FBI agents raided the Alexandria home of President Trump's former campaign manager late last month using a search warrant to seize documents and other materials, according to people familiar with the special counsel investigation into Russia meddling in the 2016
election. And Manafort's still walking around, though. He has not been incarcerated? Interesting.
All right. Jerry says, hi, panel.
Hello.
According to the Washington Post, the North Korean government said they would not attack another country unless they were first attacked themselves. If the U.S. issued the same assurance, the crisis would be resolved. Logic of deterrence. Well, there are many people who don't believe a word that either the president says, because he reverses himself a lot, in fact, lies a lot, and a lot of people don't believe a word that Kim Jong-un says either, right? Okay, Russell says, why is no one talking to Secretary Albright and asking where North Korea got nukes in the first place? P.S. I'm a Republican who was and is never a Trumper. Too bad it didn't work, but I wouldn't have voted for Ted Cruz either. Flawed candidates, flawed process, Russell.
Well, I mean, that's a reasonable point. I mean, they didn't get nuclear weapons overnight. You know, if they do have them, it's a failure not just of the Obama administration, but probably administrations before them too. You know, everyone's been kind of in a wait and see mode, and obviously we waited and saw.
We call that strategic patience.
Yes, exactly.
Slippery and accelerating slope. It's not that every administration, the Bush administration tried, the Clinton administration tried, the Obama administration tried, the other Bush administration tried. Each, you know, has slowed things down a little bit, but here we are.
Well, how do you know? How do you know it slowed things down?
Just from what I read.
And the other question is now, I posed it to Professor Shartok an hour ago, what do you do? Now, they have these, allegedly, have the 60. ICBMs with the miniaturized nukes capable of hitting Chicago or New York or
not,
whatever.
Well, the experts aren't sure that they can hit yet.
No, let's assume.
But there's always going to be that yet, though. So, yeah. I mean, whatever. It doesn't almost doesn't matter.
Yeah, let's
assume. Because if that yet is there, that means it's going to happen sooner or later anyway. So
I agree with you,
Chris. Deal with it now rather than wait for the yet.
My glimmer of hope in this is that we are sophisticated enough on the cybersecurity front that we can deal with it in that way. That's my hope. I don't know.
Here's the question. Is Kim suicidal?
I don't know. I don't think anybody knows. All we know is what we know from, you know, North Korean media. We don't, and the statements they make, who knows?
Can't believe a word he says, can't believe a word Trump says. End of discussion. I don't want to talk about it anymore.
It's a hard, it's a very, very hard problem. What about Gershwin Knight?
That'll be good.
Yep, that's tomorrow night, by the way.
Will you be there? Spot.org. We can arrange it.
I wasn't invited.
No, you're invited right now.
No one invited me.
You're invited right now. I'll make sure you get a ticket. Will you be going alone? Or?
Okay, here we go again. Philadelphia Orchestra playing Gershwin at SPAC tomorrow night. That's the 10th of August. SPAC.org. It is, from what I am told, WAMC night.
It is
WAMC
night.
That's exciting.
That's exciting almost with a question mark? That's exciting?
No,
it's very exciting.
It is. I'm trying to temper my enthusiasm.
The Philadelphia Orchestra is a world-class, excellent orchestra.
Right.
You know, that's how I ended up on the show.
How?
Last year at WAMC night, a friend of mine went up to Joe and said, you should have my friend on the radio.
Yeah, well, that's,
here
that
we
was
are.
Good.
And the rest is history.
And the rest is history. Yeah,
and here I thought I did that.
Sorry
now,
about
now
that.
Now you're tempering your enthusiasm. Cut it out. Stop it.
Sorry about that. And now you're stuck with me talking about eating Twizzlers because I'm afraid of nuclear
so
war.
Yeah, no, that's funny. The Twizzlers to you is comfort
just
food.
Stress eating, yeah. Why else would you eat Twizzlers?
So when the nukes fall, Teresa will be eating Twizzlers.
I can think of other things that would be ahead of Twizzlers on the list.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Yeah, well, I think we're out of topics and not out of time. Well, we're not out of time,
but we are out of topics.
Well, we haven't out of topics.
We haven't talked about Google.
Yeah,
but we have 2 minutes to do.
We haven't talked about climate change.
Chris's excellent article could.
Let's do that quickly.
Could Cuomo be defeated?
We'll shelve Google for tomorrow.
Oh, I was hoping to talk about that.
Yeah, Google.
Yeah. All right.
Larry Summers, he left Harvard. It took a year.
All right, well, here you go. You got 2 minutes. Go.
Go ahead,
here's
Chris.
Speed round. A former Google engineer who was fired over a memo he wrote about gender differences says he's exploring all his legal options and has already filed a labor complaint over his treatment. James Damore, whose memo over the weekend caused an uproar online, says in an email that he was terminated late Monday for perpetuating gender stereotypes. He says he considers his filing illegal because he had already filed a complaint with the National Labor Relations Board. The board declined to comment. Chris Churchill, Morton Kondracki.
Google doesn't respect free speech. Go.
You think so? No matter how stupid and asinine somebody is.
Did you read the memo? It wasn't. There were
it
things.
It basically made the point that women were not fit in the same way that men were.
I don't think it made that point.
I think
it was a complaint about the lack of ideological diversity at Google and the companies not respecting differing opinions, and they proved him right by firing him. Shortly thereafter.
The memo was entitled Google's Ideological Echo Chamber.
That is why, Chris, you're a great columnist, because you take unpopular and wrong positions and say that.
Hey, you're a columnist, too.
Yes, but I don't do that.
But I take popular positions.
Well, yes,
I think his comments were not unlike what Larry Summers, who was the president of Harvard, when he said in 2005, he said women lack the, quote, an intrinsic aptitude for math and science. And this was not unlike that. However, I will shock you perhaps by saying I think I agree. Well, you know, I'm not sure he should have been fired.
Okay, listen, we are out of time. Let's pick this one up tomorrow. Churchill, you're not back tomorrow.
Nope.
Well, write in then.
We'll expect to hear your thoughts tomorrow.
We'll read your column online. Right.
We'll pick this topic up tomorrow. This was fun. Teresa Bourgeois, thank you for being here. Chris Churchill, thank you for being here. Alan Shartok, thank you as well, sir. You are listening to The Roundtable, and it continues after this.